Hi, I'm Minka, and you're listening to The Sane Space. We are the first South African climbing podcast, we think. And we're super excited to talk to South African climbers about climbing and also some of the tough stuff. Stick around. We are committed to releasing an episode on the last Wednesday of every month, and then possibly a special edition in between. End your month on a high note with us.
Welcome to the community episode. The three of us set out to make a platform for your voices to be heard and discuss unique South African ideas within climbing. And by Job, we've done it. Do you remember the first episode? The Olympic Picture Part 1 with Chris Kosser? Give it a listen if you haven't already. We set a goal for this podcast, and this episode is a big milestone in achieving that goal. Thank you for your support. Thanks to the senders who share our episodes on the WhatsApp groups. To the senders who listen to the podcast in a car full of moths, but make sure to press play on each and every person's app just so we can get the numbers. Thank you to the senders who waited for a few episodes to release in the hopes that they would be binge-worthy. And mostly, thank you to the senders who had the geest to submit something for this episode. It feels so good to express an experience with you all. We got so many amazing submissions. There will actually be two community episodes. Twist! Keep an ear to the ground for the second one's release. This episode is the first step to South African climbers traveling the world and recording great, great stories, debating ideas, and having a laugh. In this community episode, an ode to climbing, we will hear epic tales of multi-pitch bales and the adventure of being lost in a crack. There are stories of new climbers and some more experienced ones. Really, something for the whole family. As with every podcast, if you're not enjoying it, skip ahead. Do it. You're supposed to be enjoying yourself. First up, we have Gemma Falkov easing us into it with a reading from Sharper Edges. Stories Beyond High and Wild Places, written by Andy de Klerk, and available for purchase at City Rock and Friends and Allies.
The alarm beeps far away, drawing you back from the surreal dreams of light sleep. Momentarily confused, your mind struggles to understand why you have been woken up at 2 a.m. on a cold, dark night. But that instant passes, and then you are all present. Time to go. We have got to climb. Tea is on, and you scratch a few extra minutes' warmth from the sleeping bag. It is like a tease. Your body wants to stay warm and sleep while your mind is bolt awake, planning action. The tea boils. You know how familiar it tastes, slightly metallic at altitude but sweet, and it always leaves you thirsty. A few mouthfuls of cereal, a slug of water, and you are out of your bag. The chill freezes your back as you lace up your boots and stuff the bag away. You shiver. You pack quickly. Got to go. Come on. Got to go. Breath frosts milky white in the frozen night air. You switch off the headlight for a moment and look at the stars. Brilliant specks of white, light in a black sky. But it is that huge, dark shape looming up there, where the stars are in shadow, that is pulling you. That is why you are here, doing things one step at a time. Okay, ready? You switch on the light and set off, stiffly at first. Your breath is ragged as you pull away, moving to get warm and find a rhythm. Your world has shrunk to a circle of light in front of you. After a few minutes, your body warms and relaxes into a rhythm. Long, steady breaths, uphill, easy. Your breathing becomes your movement, and it grows effortless. You hear the squeak of crampons biting into hard, frozen snow, and you see those little diamonds of ice crystals illuminated in the headlamp beam. The pack tugs at your shoulders. You have been here before. Your mind wanders as the movements take over. Thoughts drift to people loved and once loved, softly and silently in a dark and disconnected world. Everything is remote, but at the same time very familiar. You could be anywhere. Peru, Patagonia, Chamonix, the Himalaya. Places change, but it is you who has remained more or less constant. That familiar strong body, strong breathing, pulling uphill in the same way. You know the chill on your face from the inevitable down glacier wind that slices through your gloves as they hold the ice axe and ski pole. And of course, even the apprehension is the same. Those old familiar doubts that bedevil you in the night. You worry about the weather, your speed, the conditions, the wind, the rockfall, the doubts, the tiny fears. Will we make it? Will we make it? You know that they always come, and you have learned that the only way to dispel them is to go, to start up, and then they just hang in the background because in front of you is ice and rock, and you have to concentrate hard. So there is no time for doubt and fear. Everything is right. The slope drops away below you, the glacier, murky grey gloom in the darkness. You stop for a short rest, and your breathing slows down. Hard altitude breaths, dry and cold. Your back chills quickly from the wind as you sit on your pack and look at the stars, still firmly in night's grip. There is a certain time, about an hour before dawn, when you would swear that the stars surge slightly brighter. A momentary flash of sharper light. Perhaps it is their signal that they are on the wane. Perhaps it is an illusion caused by hypoxia, a shortage of oxygen. But it is this hour before dawn that holds the most significance. Somehow, it is colder and darker as the stars begin to fade after their flash. The hour passes slowly, even though your pace has quickened. You are even more isolated in your own small world. Doubts take on a sharper poignancy as the black shape above you becomes nearer, bigger in your mind but smaller in the foreshortened blackness. In the hour before dawn, the wind seems to cut deeper than it had, but you are perfectly warm in the cold, frozen night as you keep moving. Yes, this is your world. This is what you know and where you belong. You are comfortable here. You have heard this tune before and will doubtless hear it again. Here where dark earth meets dark sky on the edge of dawn, and you are ready to climb. The first pale orange and gold seeps over the horizon. Dawn is on its way, and with it the sun and warm rock and high air and a glorious day. And you will be up there on that pale orange and grey wall when it changes to red as the sun ventures over the ridge. And you'll be happy, free and alive, because this is your world, this beautiful alpine world.
Hello, my name is Alistair. We're in the basement of the building at Friends and Allies, so it's nice and quiet. I'm here with Jess.
Hi. Hi, guys. My name is Jess, Jessica Lear. Nice to meet you. I am 24 years old. I've been climbing for the past 3.5 years now. I started off bouldering and only got into lead climbing about a year ago. And now I find myself not bouldering so much anymore and just lead climbing because I love the fear factor of the heights, the exposure, the risk factor and the adrenaline. So I've been climbing for a little while now, still getting used to the fear of climbing outside. But yeah, I can honestly say it's a sport that has changed my life mentally, physically, emotionally on so many levels.
Sick.
Yeah.
Where do you do most of your climbing?
I climb at City Rock, but I actually climb mostly outdoors now. I've been making an effort to go to Boven every 2 weeks or so, which is, yeah, been really amazing.
What's your current proj?
So I recently sent Gem Squash, which was my first 22.
Cool.
And I'm thinking Rude Bushman is going to be my next one, which is kind of pushing two grades higher. So we're going to see about that. I've gotten on it before. Really cool climb, But yeah, we're yet to see.
Cool.
I'm going to be speaking about my first multi-pitch experience in Harry Smith at Mount Everest, which was pretty terrifying, but got through it anyways. So here we are in the basement doing nothing.
You survived the mountain to make it to the basement.
Exactly. You know, started at the bottom, now we're here.
Okay, where did you go multi-pitching?
So this past weekend, I went to Harry Smith to a game farm called Mount Everest.
You went to Mount Everest to climb?
Yeah.
Yes, you're so crazy.
Exactly. You know, I didn't expect to be there in South Africa. It was quite a quite a crazy time. But it's about 3 hours from Johannesburg. Very chilled drive. Got to be wary that you're driving the speed limit. Lots of road traps. But arrived there, you stay in a little chalet, which sleeps four people. Beautiful chalet, got everything that you need. There aren't any camping facilities available, unfortunately. So you do stay there because the weather is pretty heinous. When we got there, we tried to multi-pitch on the first day and the wind was literally almost blowing us off of our feet. So we went to Mooihoek Mountain. There are three mountains there. There's Mooihoek Mountain, Mount Everest, and Eagle's Head. And Mooihoek is one of the biggest ones. We went to Mooihoek Mountain, and even walking there was awful, walking in this wind. And we got there, did one pitch of a climb. My partner, Ruan, who I was climbing with, had... he got to the top of the second pitch and just asked me, he's like, do you feel like bailing? I was like, absolutely, I feel like bailing. So we did, yeah, he did two pitches. I did one, waited for him at the stance, and we got off very, very happily, walked back to the car, back to the chalets, and we're very pleased with ourselves, whilst two of our other friends decided to carry on with the multi-pitch in the weather and did five pitches of it, eventually got to the top and said it was one of the most terrifying experiences of their life. So that was our first day there.
Okay. What made the weather so hectic?
It was so, so windy. It was sunny, beautiful, you know, not a cloud in the sky, but the wind was just outrageous. It was literally like pulling you off of the ground, let alone climbing in it was terrifying enough. Yeah, so the weather was not on our side that day.
Yeah, do you know what route you did?
I have no clue.
Okay, how hard was it?
It wasn't difficult. It really wasn't too bad. No, I think it was about a 16 second pitch. Was pretty tricky at the start. I was asked to lead it and tried a few times to start it and just kept freaking out at the wind, freaking out at my first experience lead climbing a multi-pitch route. So to get back to the ground was quite a relief. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Getting on the ground and out of your harness is a good feeling when it's not fun up there.
Exactly.
Okay. Did you do the same route the second day? Did you do something different?
No. So the second day we went to Eagle's Head and we did a route which had four pitches. It was about a 18, 16, 15, 18.
Okay.
Something along those lines. I have no idea what it's called, but it was pretty terrifying at some parts. The first pitch was really good. I led the second pitch, which to my surprise was actually not as scary as I thought it would be.
Okay, so you've got to the top of the first pitch. You're starting the second pitch after your epic yesterday.
Yeah.
What's happening? How are you feeling? Describe leaving the stance, the climbing.
Feeling pretty terrified. Not wanting to lead, but knowing that it's going to be a good push for me and a step in the right direction. Knowing that I'm perfectly capable of it, but it's just mentally something that's stopping me from doing it. that it is. It's the mental. It's not the physical. I mean, your mind gives up long before your body does. So for me, it was that brain chatter telling me, you can't do this, when actually, no, I know I can, and I need to sort of silence any of those past thoughts that think that you can't do something when you really can. Yeah. So, yeah, set up at the first dance, get ready for my lead climb. It was an easy route, kind of got to the stance at the top of the second pitch. Awful stance. I had to use my knees the whole time to get my partner up the climb. So I stay there for about 20 minutes with my knees in the wall. This is my first time belaying someone up of a multi-pitch climb, and it was just awful. My knees were in so much pain. And I was really apprehensive about the belaying situation, and taking a 80 meter rope with you that is almost 10 mils thick, I wouldn't recommend, because that was tricky.
What belay device did you have?
I had a gree-gree.
Okay.
Just a normal gree-gree.
How did you belay? Like, what system did you use? Did you have it on your harness? Did you have it on the wall, on the anchor?
I had it on my harness. Yeah. I don't know if that's the correct way to do it, but
it's not unsafe, but it's effort.
It was a lot of effort, especially when your partner's heavier than you and you're just dragging them up the wall. And it felt so strange because you used to belaying someone above you. So you know that technique. When someone's below you, it feels, I mean, even just putting the rope into the belay device, I had to think for a second, do I know how to do this? Okay, no, I do know how to do this. It's fine. You've got this. It was nerve-wracking.
Yeah. Did you practice anything beforehand? Did you chat with Ruan about what the belay system is?
Yeah. So we went through everything thoroughly, went through it on the first day with our first failed pitching experience. But then on the second day, he reiterated everything we had gone through, because I was feeling very nervous and he knew, okay, safety checks.
Yeah.
You know, safety may come third, but it really came first that day.
Cool.
Yeah.
Have you heard of belaying off the anchor?
No, I haven't. Okay. I didn't even know that was a thing.
That's a good thing to check out. How were you attached to the wall? Did you have like a sling or something?
Yeah. So I had two slings, one either side of the chains, of the anchor.
Cool. Yeah.
There were no chains. There was no bailing that day. Much to my dismay, I only realized that afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, just hangers, no chains.
No chains.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you get down?
We climbed around, because we ended up in this little cave section, and then we climbed out of it. And we climbed onto Eagle's Head back into another cave where there was a different multi-pitch, and we did an 18 on the side of Eagle's Head.
Sick.
Which was, really cool. It was the third pitch of a climb, but because we were so high up already, we could just set it up and lead it there.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then from there down to the ground.
Yeah, from there we all abseiled down to the ground and then had quite a treacherous walkout.
There's this thing you can do where you put the belay device onto the wall.
Yeah.
And then it's not on your harness at all. So you just belaying in front of you on the wall, and you're free to maneuver around.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That seems like a hell of a lot less effort.
And you can, I build an anchor on the wall, and then I have the rope with a clovage onto the thing, onto the anchor, and then it's longer. And then you can, instead of being from your harness to the wall, it's from your harness up to the wall, and then you can be away from the wall and on your feet,
not on
and
your
more
knees.
Comfortable. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
I'll remember that next time. I'll learn how to do that.
I'll send you. There's this meme. It's I'll send it to you. Yeah, that's cool. You made life a little harder for yourself, but it's your first time, so
cool. Had to experience it. Had to shed some tears.
Yeah.
Shed some
fear.
Did you
cry?
Yeah.
Where did you cry? What happened?
When I was started beeling, I started freaking out and I felt like I didn't know what I was doing.
When you're up at the top of the stance, the top pitch by yourself.
And I was so worried. I was like, my partner's down there looking at him, giving him a wave, trying to reassure myself, everything's okay, starting to shed a tear, like, girl, you got this.
Did he fall off? Did you have to hold him?
No, he was fine. Everything was, thank goodness, everything was okay. Yeah, there was one part of the climb that was so slabby. You were just like, you were almost holding on to nothing. And luckily it was at a little bit of an angle. So it was almost like a little bit of a slope.
Yeah.
But you're almost just dragging yourself up there. And we ran out of drawers on this pitch. So we, there were, it was led out like every three drawers.
Yeah,
so you would
skipped one.
Yeah, you would skip one or two drawers, just hope for the best, sort of climb your way, dragging your body up. Yeah,
nice.
Quite an experience.
Did you look in the guide? They have normally the number of drawers you need.
Yeah.
And you didn't?
Yeah, we didn't.
Okay.
We didn't think to pack some more drawers.
How many drawers did you have?
We had 13.
Okay, that's quite a few. That's enough. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this one pitch, though, was about 18. Yeah.
That's a lot.
It was hella laid out.
Yeah. Yeah, for some reason, it's always the slabby climbs that are, like, way laid out.
Yeah.
It's like 10, I've done a route where it's, like, 10 meters to the first draw.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's how this felt.
Yeah. Okay, what did you expect going into it? Like, you knew you go in multi-pitching. What was going through your mind?
I expected myself to get to the top. I just didn't know how much effort it would take, more so mentally. Physically, I felt fine at the end.
Okay.
Mentally, I felt empowered, shocked, scared, wonderful. Just like a huge explosion of feelings. It was, it was awesome. But physically, I didn't feel as I do like when I exert myself, when I usually lead climb, when I'm really going for a send. This was more like you mentally getting up this wall because it is so freaking high off of the ground. And your thoughts of I might possibly fall are that much, that much louder.
Yeah. Did you fall off at all?
No.
No. You just stuck it.
Just powered through.
Did you pull on any draws?
Yes.
You did?
Yes. Yeah. When we got to the slabby section in the third pitch where it was, we'd left draws out, I pulled on draws and I felt nothing for doing it.
Yeah. I love pulling on drawers on big routes. It just makes you feel, you're just like so scared and you just wrap your fingers around the dog bone and suddenly you're more calm and in control.
Yeah,
and you're just like,
such an element of safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like, so it's just like one hand movement from like a small hold to a draw just changes everything.
Yeah.
In your mind, you're just like suddenly safe.
Yeah.
How was the rope management? You said you had an 80-meter rope.
Rope management was tough, to say the least. Luckily, it wasn't windy on that day, because on our first day, our rope blew all over the side of the mountain, and we had to mission to get it loose, because it's on all of these little chicken heads as well, so it just wraps around them. Whereas for our actual second day multi-pitch experience, it wasn't windy. The rope even was hanging off the side of the mountain and disgustingly heavy to try and drag up. It was still that much more manageable because it wasn't windy. But it was heavy. It was a task. You know, you physically exert yourself from just pulling up the rope, never mind the climbing. Yeah.
And with 80 meters, if you do like a 30 meter pitch, you're pulling 50 meters before you even start belaying.
Exactly.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Would you do anything differently?
Well, upon this new knowledge, this newfound knowledge, I think I would definitely put my Gregory into the anchor and belay like that. I think that would be a lot more helpful because that whole belaying situation just freaked me out. And throughout the whole multi-pitch, I kept feeling like, no, you don't want to do this again. This is terrifying. I'm never going to do this again. Get to the top of it and this relief rushes over you and you're like, okay, I'm capable. I want to do this again.
Yeah, you had a experience of type 2 fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How are your feet, your climbing shoes? What shoes did you take?
I have Le Sportiva Muras. I just got them resoled, so they're feeling so good. They're about a year old now, so they're starting to fall apart. I do need a new pair of shoes. The straps are falling apart, but it was pretty comfortable. I did take them off in between stances. It gave my feet a little bit of a rest, otherwise, it was great. Yeah, super comfortable. You don't realize how comfortable your shoes are until you put on your first pair of climbing shoes. And you're like, oh, this is not so sweet. Getting used to my nice new climbing shoes, which, yeah, are bendy and mold to your feet properly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes, like, stiff beginner shoes aren't actually as comfy.
No.
Yeah.
No, not
they at all. Depends how they're sized.
Yeah. If they're way too big and they're slipping off your feet, it's not ideal.
Yeah. But it's nice for trad or for multi-pitching.
Yeah. I think I could have maybe worn slightly less tight shoes for multi-pitching, especially because you're on there for so long.
Yeah.
You know, 5 hours later,
it's like your feet are... like a five-hour gym session. Yeah. Your toes can't handle it.
No. Your feet feel kind of freaked out afterwards.
I alternate, depends on what I'm doing, but very often I wear my tighter shoes when I'm climbing because you just feel so much more confident in your good shoes.
Exactly. I feel like I'm sort of slipping off the wall when I wear my loose shoes.
Yeah.
And that sense of confidence and safety isn't there.
Yeah. Important when you're 100 meters off the ground.
Yeah. You know, quite essential.
Yeah. Did anything catch you by surprise?
I think once you get through the second pitch, you're so far off of the ground that the fear of the height kind of, it isn't so relevant anymore because you can't necessarily see the ground. Like when you just lead climbing and you're doing a normal climb, you can see the ground and that fear factor is really there of, ooh, there's the surface I could possibly hit. When you get so high off the ground, it becomes almost, the fear dissipates a little bit because it's just so vast that you can't necessarily see, oh, I'm going to fall in this specific place. It's like, well, this is just this massive thing. And if I fall, I don't know where I'm going to land. And the fear factor suddenly isn't so prominent. That was something that was really cool because I'm terrified of heights. It's one of the biggest reasons I climb is to face that fear. And to get that high off the ground and not feel scared of the height was incredible. Yeah.
Nice. Do you think I think you get used to it as well.
Yeah. The longer you're on the wall, the safer you feel.
Yeah.
And the more you just have to give it your all.
Yeah. Did you come close to falling off? Were you sketching out and, you know, every
on the slabby bits, I was freaking out a little bit because it was at a bit of a slope. You couldn't see what was below you, but you felt like if you slid off, you would just sort of fall into the abyss because you couldn't really see what was going on. That was pretty scary. Yeah, but no, it didn't fall off, pulled on drawers, made my way up.
Cool. Did you take a headlamp?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah.
Sick.
Always pack my headlamp.
Yeah. Did you need it?
No.
You guys were good.
Yeah. The sun actually only set there at about 7. And we started at about 12:30, so we were fine.
Okay.
Got back just in time to have a braai.
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure you were climbing in the sun.
Yeah.
How was that?
It wasn't too bad. It was quite cloudy on the day, so we were really lucky with the weather. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. You had the sun and the wind, the two things on the day you bailed.
Yeah.
And the next day, calm and overcast.
Yeah, that exactly. Nice. It was quite a blessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lacquer.
Sick.
I think. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, that's pretty comprehensive.
Sick. Do you want to? Lacquer, Jess, thanks for joining us on this podcast episode.
Yeah, and thank you for having me.
For sure. See you in the wild.
Yeah.
Hey, did you know that supporting the Sense Base on Patreon is like bouldering? Just three moves and you're done. Here's the beta. Step one, go to patreon.com and search for the Sense Base. Step two, choose from one of four membership levels, each with their own exclusive benefits and content. Step three, complete the sign up and boom. Just like that, you've supported your local climbing podcast. Thank you for spotting us.
How's it? It's Rahul here. I'm with Jerisha. We're sort of relatively new to climbing. We started climbing indoors in about 2019, but really only properly kicked off in 2020 during COVID when we had nowhere to go. We decided to invest in a set of sport climbing gear, and we've been climbing outdoors ever since. We've recently actually invested in a little bit of trad gear just to start us going. We're trying to sort of look at the different types of climbing, see what really works with us sort of mentally, what makes sense. Trad, we really did enjoy quite a lot. It gives us sort of don't climb above your grade. Try to embrace the exploration of the rocks, understand your limits and just be safe, which we really did appreciate as well. That's not to say we don't love sport climbing and bouldering as well. The competitiveness and the difficulty there really, really appealed to us. The difficulty for us was really that climbing is taught mostly through a community. And because we started learning during lockdowns, especially outdoors, it made it very difficult to engage with that community. But slowly by slowly, our tiny community has grown. And as a result, we've just kept learning. So we'd like to obviously to continue to grow that community and create more and more interactions with each other. And I think the sort of more we learn from each other, especially in a South African topology, these engagements will really help us build a larger knowledge base that we can all utilize. Climbing is really just a beautiful mix for me of ballet, yoga, and meditation, coupled with a whole lot of pumped out arms and, you know what, I just love it and nothing else fulfills me the way it does and I'd be quite lost without it.
Hi, my name is Jerisha. My little ode to climbing sort of starts with my appreciation for how meditative it is. I feel quite connected to my body. I wish I'd found this earlier on in my life because it's taught me so much about myself. In a weird way, it's also helped me deal with my anger issues, which I'm greatly appreciative of. I just wanted to say to the City Rock route setters as well, it was mentioned in the podcast that there were some negative comments about the routes being on the tougher side for short people. As a shorty, I just want to give my perspective too. I'm glad that some routes are on the harder side for me because it really pushes me and forces me to get creative and get a bit stronger or just to learn how to deal with failure, which is also useful in some ways. I also heard you guys go treading quite often, so I'm sure you bring back what you learn out there back to the gym. And you guys get, you know, creative with it as well. So yeah. It's on the tougher side for shorties, but thank you.
So this is my submission of stories. I think I'm just going to go through a bunch. The first, maybe just give a bit of background. I'm Marnie. I've been climbing for about 3 years, a little bit more than 3 years now. Actually started in Strumans Valley. Yeah, then joined the City Rock community and yeah, got into it real hard, real fast. This last year, I've been going on a lot of epics and adventures and going outside as much as possible. Lockdown does that to you. Yeah, I think where my stories really start to get interesting is first trad experience was with MCSA. Yeah, they had a trad clinic, myself and Chris Harris and a few other people joined up, really keen on trad climbing. I've been doing sport quite a bit, had a couple of trips to Boerfen and. Yeah, I wanted to step it up to the next level. Did the trad clinic, Benny and Scott led it. Yeah, they helped us out quite a bit. Yeah, ended up leading my first trad route, was a 15, I forget the name now, that day. Then a couple weekends passed, myself and Chris were super amped on trad climbing, so I think it was like 2 maybe 3 weekends after that we decided we want to come in on a solo mission to the Kloofs to come embrace the trad. And that we did. We organized with Benny to get the MCSA rack, which is a huge help. And yeah, morning came, drove to Utopia. We parked our car at Benny's house, got the rack. Benny also went into the Kloofs somewhere, I can't remember where, but yeah, also went on an expedition that day, and myself and Chris went Boulder Kloof side, I think. Benny recommended a route called Boulder Helix, which is 17. It's quite a beautiful route, like starts kind of belay out of a river, which is a bit tricky, or a stream. Then, yeah, goes up the wall, a little bit of a slabby section, go under a roof, huge roof, but you don't climb through it, luckily, it's only a 17. You climb like to the left and around the route, and then around the roof, and then you go up to the top. So Chris led the first pitch, I belayed him up, and this being our first, I think he went somewhere in between, but this was my first solo trad mission without someone who's super experienced. So yeah, there was a hiccup or two. I wasn't tied into the other side of the rope, so I had to like shout, stop. Tied myself in after he pulled up the rope, after he led the first pitch. In the madness and the confusion and the stuff and the things that go with your first solo trad, I didn't realize this, but I forgot my ATC at the bottom. Super keen to climb. It's just a top rope 17. It's easy. Missioned up. And that it was. It was quite easy. Went fast. Got to the belay station. And then I was going to lead the second pitch, so racked up, led up the second pitch, got to the top, set up an anchor. The climbing was easy and fast. I think the top section of that route is like a 13 or something like that. It was super easy. So the climbing wasn't hard, but this was like, I think my second or third ever anchor being set up, so I took my time, made sure everything's right and correct and solid, equalized, all those things. Yeah, and then wanted to clip in my ATC. fiddled around on my harness. Realized my ATC is not on me. Shouted down to Chris. Chris, you have my ATC down there. Nope, ATC is not down there. Yeah, in any case, now we had to think, what are we going to do? One of the options that came to mind was Mantis hits Belay to belay him up, but neither of us were 100% sure how it works, if it works, one directional, two directional, and on the second pitch of a trad route, I don't think it's the best place to figure out how that type of things work. So what we decided to do is he's going to lower me down. I'm going to use his device, belay him up, because he also wanted to get to the top. Don't want to stop at the first pitch. So I go down, he goes up, cleans my anchor, sets up the rope, rappels down, I rappel down. That was the plan, and yeah, that's what we did. So I came down, swapped belays, Chris went up. I can't remember if he actually led it. Anyways, he got up. As he got to the top, I realized it is now getting late. It's been a full long day and the sun is like touching the top of the cliffs. We're here now. You can rush, but you shouldn't rush too much, especially if you're still a little bit inexperienced. You have to check what you're doing, double check what you're doing, make sure everything's right. So I didn't chase Chris too much. Anyways, he got down, told him, listen, dude, we need to hustle a bit. It's going to be dark when we want to walk out. Now I also don't have an ATC, so I can't rappel down. So at the top of the, I think it was actually a three pitch route. I think he did the first two. At the top of the second pitch, I tied in and he had to lower me down. Just normal, he clips into his belay device, lowers me down. But now the problem is you can't really see because the belay is like around the corner, stuff like that. So he lowers me down, everything's fine, but at the bottom there's some trees. And he can't see it. He's just going at a constant pace. And it's quite dense trees and there's this tiny little hole in the trees where I just fit through. I threaded the needle a bit. Got to the bottom. Untied myself, started to back up because now the sun was behind the cliffs. Obviously also we like in the cliffs now, so angles and stuff like that. But sun was behind the cliffs, but it was still like, what's it, dusk? So you could still see, but no lights needed yet. But getting there. Chris came down. I think he's still on the first pitch. Dropped a nut or three and they fell in a pool at the bottom. He had to dive in to get them. And this was all, I think, pretty much, I don't remember exactly what time of year it was, but I think it was like autumn, winter time. So not the hottest of days. Now it's getting dark and he had to jump into the ice cold water to go fetch some gear. Once we had everything packed up, it was now getting dark. Luckily, I had a headlamp, but this was one of those cheapy Energizer ones. So, I mean, it makes light, but yeah, not spectacular light. Chris did not have a headlamp. I had sandals for footwear. Yeah. So then with one headlamp, two people, and a bit of gear on the backs and everything, we didn't really know where like easy exits were. I still really don't know where like an easy gully to scramble out is from there. But yeah, so then we decided the plan would be to hike up the junction all the way to Cedar campsite, walk out to Utopia. But now also remembering Benny knows we are in the Kloof. Our car is parked at his house, and we said we're going to bring the trad rack back that same day, obviously. So now we need to hustle and get out so Benny doesn't get worried and calls MCS Mountain Rescue on us. But also it's dark. There's some slippery sections. There's some like, I'd say 5B, 5C boulder problems that you need to climb out. And it's dark, one flashlight, yeah. So in Afrikaans, there's a saying, "Vat jou tyd, maar maak net gou." So that's what we did. We had a steady pace, hiked all the way up the Kloof. Quite an interesting experience to go up the Kloof in total darkness. There was one point where we switched off the headlamp and you really can't see anything because the trees are so like, it just closes up everything. There's just these like spots of moonlight that come through. But other than that, there's no light at all. Yeah, mission up the Kloof. Like I said, I mean, it's probably not 5B, 5C, but it's dark and you're hurrying and it's intense and stuff. So then 5B, 5C boulder problems. And you don't know where you're going. So you're missing all the easy routes. You're just trying to go straight forward. Yeah. Anyways, hike. And now also finding the exit to Cedar campsite is also a bit tricky in the dark. But eventually, we got there. Got out at 6:45. Got out of the Kloof. Luckily, my phone picked up signal. First thing I did was phone Benny. Just tell him, Benny, we're safe. We're alive. Things took a little bit longer than we expected, but we are safe and we are alive. He said he was 15 minutes away from phoning Mountain Rescue on us, which could have been quite the problem actually, because then they probably would have gone to where they thought we were, and we were actually already hiked out, completely different place. So then it would have been a run around all for nothing. Then chilled at Cedar campsite for a bit, caught our breath, caught our calmness, hiked out to Utopia and Benny's place. I think we got there at about half past eight, somewhere there. And then Benny and Mel were nice enough to make us a cup of coffee. They were busy braaiing for the night, so put on a extra worsie for us. Thank you, Benny. Thank you, Mel. It was very nice. That was my first trad experience, and my first solo trad experience, and I think it was entered it with a bang. On to story number two. Skip ahead a couple of months. I'd gone, I think once, maybe twice on a trad mission again. Not a lot. To this day, I only have a handful of trad climbs under my belt. But everyone epic. This one was with myself and Minka. We decided we are gonna also go to Utopia, enter through there, go down Frog Gully and climb Golden Balls, which is a 15. Yeah, that was the plan. I think that day was the day that things just didn't work out. We departed Joburg a bit late. We got to the first toll gate. Neither of us had cash. Both of us have gone like walletless, so we've got the cards on our tap to pay phones and watches and stuff like that. So wallets were at home, didn't have cash. Yeah, toll gate people said, sorry, can't help you. Reversed out of the toll gate, drove on, hoping to find a garage at the next one. Well, before the next one, so that we can like draw money or something. And anyways, drove on, no garage before the next toll gate. Yeah, drove in, thought maybe it was just that one toll gate that doesn't have tap to pay. But it wasn't. This one also didn't have tap to pay. This time though, there were like three or four cars behind me. So then it was that awkward. Sorry guys, I need to reverse out of here now. Because they're not letting me through. Because I can't pay. Yeah. Reverse out. Make the U-turn. Go back. Plan was then to go back to the last garage. I think there was an F&B there. Go and draw money. E-wallet, missions, all of those things. Yeah, on the way back to the garage, I saw the toll gate on the off-ramp that we wanted to take was only on the one side. So going back the other way, there's no toll gate. Yeah, so got off from the reverse direction. Things were back on track. Got to Utopia. Hiked in. It was a pretty standard, pleasant hike. Not very eventful. I mean, it is Michalisburg, so very pretty. Searching for Frog Gully. We got all the like markers and the boards and followed them. But just couldn't find Frog Gully. So we like walked up the edge, up the edge, up the edge, because eventually we're going to walk into Frog Gully. And then we ended up at Cedar Campsite. made a bunch of people there. I think Stefan and those people. Yeah, Stefan and them were there. Yeah, said hi to them. Okay, Laka, we're going to go climb Golden Balls. Okay, cool. Go into the cliff. Walk all the way down. Get to the base of Golden Balls. Chill there for a bit, have a snack, check out the route, read the route guide, because jump back 1 year to 2019, no, actually 2 years to 2019. I was at the first Kloofest where we did the rope swing, and to get up after you did the rope swing, we climbed out Golden Balls. So I've done it before, but it's been a while. Always good idea to read the route guide. Yeah, sat at the bottom, read the route guide, checked where we are going to go, what we're going to do. I think the plan was Minka leads the bottom section, the first pitch, and then I lead up the rest. And so we did. Racked up, flaked the ropes. Another group of people arrived, also to climb Golden Balls. They were going to climb up behind us. And yeah, we set off. Minka led the first pitch, got to the stance. Golden Balls has these nice big ledges. I think, yeah, it's bigger than a ledge. It's like, it's just, yeah, you can, yeah, it's very, very nice. And it's GB lays. It's perfect for a beginner trad route. yeah, got to the stance. I followed up. Yeah, key thing to remember is we left all of our bags and extra stuff except for our trad gear at the bottom of the climb. Yeah, so finished first pitch, I rack up. Now I need to lead the rest of the route. And we read the route guide. From what I remember from the Kloofest is you like go up this open book and then you go traverse left and you go up this face with like a little bit of a crack in it and you follow that crack up to the top. But the route guide said you traverse right. So I decided let's rather follow what the route guide said rather than follow what I think I know. And let's go up the right. So, all racked up, route guide read. I think I understand where I need to go. But that's also the very fun thing about trad is the route is where you can place gear. And if you can get up it, that's where the route is. It's not bolts and you're only allowed to stay so many meters from the bolt and then you're off route and like, no, it's, no, you climb up a mountain. That's, no, I think it's, that's the purity of it. Yeah, so I knew route guide said, right. So I climbed up and like, whenever I got stuck, I tried to just like stick right, go to the right, go to the right, go to the right. Which ended us up in a, I'm very bad at guessing grades, but I don't think it was a 15 that we attempted. Yeah, so at the top section, I got to a part where there's like this crack where you can get a decent left hand jam in, but now my last gear is a couple of meters below me. And I need to get something else in now. Because before that, it was relatively easy climbing. But there's this, I think that was the crux of the route to me. It's like a layback hand jam, not super great feet. And the gear is far below me. So with one hand in, fiddling with my nuts on my rack, managed to just barely get a nut in the crack. Clipped the rope in, got to the top. I think after that I set up an anchor just above that. I think I managed to set up an anchor there. And yeah, then Minka had to follow up. She did it. I think getting through that crack section was quite the achievement. Yeah, honestly, she did way better than I expected on that. I knew she could get through it, but yeah, she did it easier than I thought. yeah, then we still had a little last bit of section, but now we've already realized the people that followed up behind us veered off left. And we are right. Yeah, so now we just need to continue, get to the top of the mountain. And then the plan is to walk along the top to where Golden Balls ends and then find the rappel down from there. Yeah, so we get to... Okay, Minka's on belay. I need to climb the rest of the route. Golden Balls B, I think. I don't know. Variation. So I go up, and I think there was once or twice where I just climbed myself into a impossible to continue position, and then I had to like down climb and retrieve gear and then choose another route and then go up and then, oh, this isn't going to work, and down climb, retrieve gear, pick another line. Eventually got to the very top of the kloof. Then belayed Minka up, got to the top. Now also, this was pretty... I don't think at that time... We've climbed a couple of times in the gym by then, but we haven't gone on a lot of adventures. So I still didn't... I knew she was keen for adventure and up for anything, but I wasn't 100% sure where that line was, because now we had to do like a little bit of a sketchy traverse around the edge, over the top, to get to the actual end to Golden Balls. yeah, but I was okay. Asked if she was okay with it. She was okay with it. And we did it. Did the sketchy traverse. Got to the end of Golden Balls. We didn't rappel from there. We went a little bit further if you facing Golden Balls to the left. If you're looking at it from the top to the right, there's like a little gully thing there. And yeah, so we rappelled down from there. But now, as the theme is with myself and going into the kloof, this was like I think like half past four in the afternoon that we were at the top and starting to rappel down. So got to the bottom, and I've been in this situation before, so I tell Minka, look, we need to decide now, how are we going to get out of here? Because it's going to be dark soon. What's going to be the easiest, quickest way to get out? And I mean, one of the options was probably just go up Golden Balls again. But I think, yeah, it was just a whole day of climbing. Yeah, not very keen. And then potentially having to lead trad in the dark. I wasn't super keen on that. The other option was once again going up Cedar Kloof to Cedar Campsite and walk back to Utopia from there. But Minka mentioned on a previous trip that they just went down the T-junction that faces towards Utopia direction. Like, you can just go down there and it like ends up basically there, which sounded ideal. Like, it could definitely work. So we chose that option. Walked down the kloof. Here and there, a little bit of slip and slide. Had to set up. There was quite a sketchy, slippery section where we actually put a sling around a tree to like hold onto, and then slip and slide past the slip and slide part, and then take the sling off the tree. Yeah, so always fun in the kloof. Then we got to section where it's a big pool of water. And now this was like, this was winter. It was quite cold. We've been hiking and it wasn't super freezing, but it was cold. And now we are faced with a body of water and there's no way to get around it or over it. You have to go through it. So after a bit of, let's call it debate, Minka convinced me that we should just try and go through. So shoes are off. And there's this little, there's like a boulder and then there's a gap and then it's the wall of the kloof, so you can like chimney down it a bit and stuff. And yeah, I was barefoot and lowered myself down, and my right foot slipped on the rock because the rock is super slippery, and my left foot touched the water and I felt just how cold the water is. And I pushed myself back up and I told Minka, this is not a good idea. We shouldn't do this. I can't remember, but I think after a second or two, not a very long, but a little bit more of debate, we decided, let's turn around, because we don't want to be cold and wet in the dark at this time of day or of the year. And then we have to still drive back home. Didn't sound very pleasant. So we decided to turn around, go back. But now it was getting dark. So once again, same story. This time, I don't know if it's luckily or it's unluckily, but I mean, people knew we were coming out here. I'm saying here because I'm sitting in the kloof recording this. I'm at Upper Tonkwani at the moment. People knew we were coming, but there wasn't someone actively waiting for us to be back at their place at 6 or something. So we didn't have a timeline or an ETA to be back or something like that. So we could take our time to go back. But still, it's dark. Once again, I didn't quite know where Minka's lines were and limits were. But that day definitely showed me we haven't reached them yet, I think. Minka, correct me if I'm wrong. so then hiked out in the dark, up the kloof. We made these like almost natural transitions of like I'd be leading and walking in front. She'd be walking behind me and then I don't know where to go anymore. And then she'd be walking in front and then I'd walk behind. And then she doesn't know it. And then I know, okay, let's go here. Let's go up there. Let's walk here. And there was a point where I don't know what happened, but I got a brain bubble or something. And I turned and I walked like towards the kloof wall. And I just got totally and utterly confused of where I was. I was like, there shouldn't be a wall here. I was walking upstream. We need to turn around now. And I don't know where we're going. And after another minute or two, Minka made the very, very good point of let's just look at which way the stream's flowing and then we go upstream. Cool. we were back on track. Y'all walked upstream once again, got out of the cliff at like, I think, once again, like 7, round about there. We just chilled for quite a bit at the top of the cliff. But then remembered, we need to get back and somehow we need to organize money for toll gates, because we did like a loop-de-loop roundabout Japo to get through the toll gate, but that's not going to work for when we want to go back. Luckily, Stefan and them were still camping at Cedar, so we got up and they were kind enough to give us the I think it's 15 rand for that toll gate, 15 rand that we needed to get back. So I think moral of the story, always remember your flashlight and your helmet, but flashlight's also super important.
Hey everybody, it's Amy here, contributing to our own podcast community episode. Here it is. I'll never get into trad. Those people are crazy. I'll never get into trad. I just don't trust me. I'll never get into trad. It's just way too high. I'll never get into trad. It's a sure way to die. You should get into trad. You're stronger than you feel. You should get into trad. It makes everything real. You should get into trad. It'll set you free. You should get into trad. I'll take you with me. I got into trad. I climbed and I tried. I got into trad with you by my side. I got into trad. I climbed into the blue. I got into trad. I put my trust in you.
Oh, what a time it is to be alive. Please carry on sharing your stories or your creations. We love to hear them. Check out our blog for more information about the community episodes. We are definitely going to keep them coming. And now, to soothe your sweet, sweet ears and to thank them for listening all the way until the end, we have a song by Benji Dorfin from the band Hiding Bigfoot. Check them out on social media. Thanks, Benji.